The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The El Conservador Radio Show is sponsored by George Rodriguez on 930 AM, The Answer. Time for the El Conservador Radio Show with George Rodriguez. George is a constitutional conservative who loves to expose fake news and liberals. Be a part of the show. Call 210-308-8867. And now, El Conservador, George Rodriguez.
Howdy, 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 my friends. George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas, on this beautiful Saturday, September the 28th, 2019. Welcome to the show, my friends. We've got two very good special guests with us who are regular guests, should I say, regular folks now because they provide us such good information. We've got Mr. Todd Benzman from the Center for Immigration Studies, who's going to be giving us an update on some of the research and investigative work that he's been doing regarding illegal immigration south of the border and what's driving it, as well as we've got also have Mr. Jason Jones, who is with the he is a criminal expert, an expert on border crime, and he's going to be giving us an update of what's happening with the cartels and all of the crime south of the border, my friends. There was a report this past week regarding the number of murders that have been occurring in Juarez, just across the border from El Paso. We got to remember that it was in El Paso not too long ago that Mr. Beto O'Rourke, Robert Francis O'Rourke, stood there and he said that El Paso is one of the safest places in the world because of the immigrants. He didn't call them illegal aliens. Well, I got news for you. Right across the border, my friends, the murder rate has hit an astonishing rate, just as bad as Afghanistan, if not worse. So, you know, we're going to be chatting with that with him about that. We also have some updates on news. So let me go ahead and jump into the news stuff, all of the news that's been going on lately. I'll give you a real quick update. First of all, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR, they've released a report that says that the illegal immigration population in San Antonio has in the United States, should I say, has surged by nearly 2 million. By 2 million, it has expanded. And they estimate that it's about 14.3 million. I would estimate that it's a lot higher than that. But this is fair, and that's fine. That's fine. This is their educated guesstimate. And the report says that the increases are due to several factors. First of all, they're due to the lax laws that we really, really have not been. We haven't been deporting people. We haven't been taking a strong stand on illegal immigration. Like I've said repeatedly, my friends, if you don't punish bad behavior, you only get more of it. You only get more of it. What we've been doing is rewarding bad behavior. We've been giving illegal aliens free college, free housing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, all that does is encourage more illegal immigration. So, well, that's one. The other thing is the promises of sanctuary, because we've got tons of communities now, not to mention states, who are not cooperating with ICE, who are not cooperating with immigration law enforcement. And so, well, that's another magnet that brings people. And so the word spreads, and this is where they end up going. I mean, Baltimore, suburban Maryland, suburban Washington, D.C., the Maryland suburbs, they've been plagued lately by illegal alien crime, and they don't have anybody to blame but themselves because they are sanctuary communities. The other thing is that there is the growing threat from the Trump administration that the Trump administration is getting tough and is closing the border. And that has encouraged more people to hurry up and get across the border illegally. You know, it scared everybody, and so they want to get in before the door closes. So these are the factors that have encouraged people to, more people to come in. What's very, very interesting, my friends, what's important to note is that there have been efforts, to stop and to slow the immigration to date. Most of it has been due to the creative, independent actions of President Trump and his administration, because the Congress has not lifted a finger. And, the thing that I take my hat off to the Trump administration is that they are not afraid of the media or the leftist lawsuits, the leftist protesters. And so, that's the positive news in that aspect of it. There's also news coming from Indianapolis. I don't know how many of you remember, but there was a Guatemalan illegal alien that has been convicted of causing the crash and death of Indianapolis Colts linebacker Edwin Jackson and his Uber driver. This illegal alien, Manuel Orrego Zavala from Guatemala, who was here in the United States illegally, was drunk and he crashed into the car that was carrying Edwin Jackson, the football player, and killed him. And so Chief Justice, District Judge Jane McManus, has ordered that Manuel Orrego Zavala to serve his sentence consecutively. He sentenced him to 16 years in the state prison. And the word is that, the sentence was because, quote, to send a strong message to the defendant and others in similar situations that our nation's laws must be respected and there are real consequences for violating the law. Orrego Zavala was in the United States illegally, as we've already mentioned, and it was the third time that he had come in and been caught and deported. Third time. It was also, this guy was involved in other alcohol-related crashes in the past. So this guy was not only in the country illegally, he was posing as a threat already. Then, of course, there is the situation with an illegal alien who attacked the Border Patrol agent near Freer, Texas, Malesio López Hernández, age 39, resisted arrest and attacked a Border Patrol agent in the bushes out in the country, attacked him with a flashlight earlier this year. And the agent tried to detain López Hernández. And in the struggle, the illegal alien grabbed his flashlight from the vest and verbally threatened him and then hit him on the head with a flashlight. The agent did sustain some injuries, and López Hernández was arrested when others arrived. At the hearing, the defense attempted to convince the court that López Hernández thought the officer was a cow. Okay, this was the defense. This was the defense of the illegal alien. They said that López Hernández thought the officer was a cow. Jeez. Oh, my friends. I are these liberal attorneys any more stupid? Anyway, we wanted to check on a couple of things. I wanted to run a very interesting interview that was done with my good friend Hector Garza from the Border Patrol Union here in Laredo, in the Laredo area, that was done on Fox News. Let me run it and then we'll talk about it, because it is related to a very important new issue, new change in the in immigration law and in the policies and procedures.
And also breaking tonight, the Trump administration strikes a deal that would send asylum seekers at the southern border to El Salvador. Acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan announcing the new deal today, saying it would act as a deterrent to the surge of illegal immigrants. McAleenan reached a similar deal with Guatemala last month. Joining me now to talk about it, National Border Patrol Council Vice President Hector Garza. So, step by step, the president is taking, Hector, aggressive actions. What do you make of the latest ones I just identified, in particular, the new deal that would send people back to El Salvador if they had passed through El Salvador?
So this is a very good asylum cooperation agreement, and we're very grateful that President Trump and his administration has been working on this deal with El Salvador. Essentially, this agreement will apply to those migrants that come from countries like Nicaragua, Cuba, Brazil, and some Central America, Central African nations. Essentially, these people cross through El Salvador on their way to the United States. The U.S. will then be able to send them back to El Salvador so they can wait for their asylum process. And that is very good because essentially what the United States is planning on doing is building an asylum system in El Salvador so that when these migrants pass through El Salvador, they can seek asylum there and not in the United States.
Just the word. And so, my friends, this change has great ramifications, because what has been happening, particularly with Salvadorans, because those, that is them and the Hondurans and the Guatemalans, of course, the Central Americans, have been the ones that have been coming in greatest numbers into the United States. And thanks to Mexico, at least a little bit, they have curtailed some of that. And now many of folks are having to stay in the country of first, the country that they first flee into, which is in some cases Mexico. Others are now going to have to stay in El Salvador or Guatemala or Honduras, depending on which country they cross into first. This has tremendous impact on. It is going to be helping us to control the border a whole lot, because what's been happening in the past is that they have been arriving and then coming in, getting a court date. They get released and then they are never seen again, and they remain in the country illegally. So this is a tremendous, tremendous change of policy that's gonna, in my opinion, is going to be a game changer in many, many ways. Again, this is the Trump administration being creative. This is the Trump administration taking in the initiative, because obviously the Congress, particularly the Democratic-led House, is not lifting a finger to do a doggone thing. On the contrary, they want to lessen the number of holding cells, the number of holding facilities, so that people are going to get released. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing the games that these people play. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a break now. But welcome to the show, my friends. I hope that you will call others and tell them to join us. Here on KLUP 930 AM radio, The Answer. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hello, El Conservador listeners. If you are interested in following George Rodriguez, El Conservador, we invite you to follow him at his internet website, elconservador.net. You can also follow him on Facebook at George Rodriguez El Conservador and on Twitter at El Conservador for daily commentaries. You can also purchase his book, El Conservador, Conservative Opinions, online at Amazon.com. The book contains essays and commentaries about illegal immigration, fake news, and race relations. If you are interested in inviting El Conservador to speak to your group or event, please contact him through Facebook or through the station at 930amtheanswer.com. El Conservador thanks you for your support. Keep the fire of freedom burning.
All right, folks, once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you on KLUP 930 AM radio, The Answer. And we've got our very good buddy, Jason Jones, the criminal, the international and border criminal expert. Jason is getting to be pretty well known. He's traveling all over the place, sharing his ideas as well as what he sees, all his research that's going on. So we wanted to get him back up here and get us updated on what is happening, because there has been some violence south of the border, particularly during Mexican Independence Day, apparently. And Jason, welcome to the show. Tell us about this situation in Brackettville recently, where there was a shot taken at somebody shot at a Border Patrol agent. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and George, it's great to be back with you, and thanks for having me again. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, this is the thing that I've been really concerned about, and that is that we have to understand that what happens in Mexico directly affects the American people and our law enforcement officers. And the reason I bring this up is because there was a Border Patrol agent who was shot September 13th, just outside of Brackettville, after conducting a traffic stop. Now, luckily, he was riding with a partner, and what it looks like is that upon his approach, he was shot by the driver, and his partner opened up return fire, killing the suspect. And while it's, you know, everything is law enforcement sensitive right now, that it's under an active investigation, that area is the resupply zone for Cartel del Noreste, known as CDN. And also, many of the listeners will remember a time when they were the old Las Zetas before being rebranded and have become what they are today. But the reason it's important and the reason I bring it up is because, and what we need to keep an eye on, and I'm trying to get the information out now, is the driver linked to CDN? And if so, what was the reason for this shooting? Because that is a resupply zone for the cartel. Money and weapons move south, resupplying this cartel. And when they battle, they have to get resupplied. So that means money shipments increase. People that owe the cartel money in Mexico, they better start paying up here domestically, and they got to move more weapons because of losses. And I can tell you, CDN just in the last 2 weeks has lost over 20 sicarios through shootings that have just been out the city of Nuevo Laredo.
Now tell the folks what a sicario is. You know that, and also tell us, are there various routes that the various cartels take serve as their personal turf, and therefore they use those routes? Is that it?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. So the thing that really separates a cartel from a U.S.-based gang, and you will hear a lot of so-called experts who've never debriefed a cartel member consider them or call them gangs. They are absolutely not a gang. They truly control territory. That means the mayor is on the payroll, the governors are on the payroll, and very high-level leaders within the military who usually command areas are also on that. That's how this works. And sicarios, specifically, are very highly trained individuals. Now, within each cartel, it's different. You know, some of them go through just a basic, others go through a basic and an advanced, and then specialized training on how to work two-way handheld encrypted radios, special weapons, things like that. So each cartel, while a little different because they are all a network and are managed and have a different command structure and how they operate, what should concern everyone about this particular event, though, is that CDN is a very powerful cartel. They come back after being dismantled due to the great work of DEA and U.S. Marshals and SAMAR, which is Mexico's most elite forces, but they have come back very strong. And now they are causing a lot of problems throughout the state of Tamaulipas. And just so the listeners know, the entire state of Tamaulipas right now, which borders Texas from Matamoros or from our side, it would be Brownsville all the way to past Del Rio, is under the control of CDN, and all of that state is embattled since August 13th from cartel on cartel violence.
That is really frightening. That is really, really scary.
It is, but you know, it's also preventable. We saw this coming through movements of Cartel del Noreste into Miguel Alemán, and it should have been stopped. And I'll be very frank and open with you. We cannot have, as we have been having, George, hundreds of thousands of rounds fired. I mean, these gun battles go on for 8-plus hours at times. And we cannot have that occurring on our border. And, you know, as much as, you know, we see the great work of this president to bring the military to our border to try to limit immigration issues, the leadership within our government agencies are not stepping up and realizing the threats that are posed by these cartels. And I do hold those agency leaders accountable, because they brief our president, and they should have stopped this. This was stoppable.
These gun battles that you're talking about, these are the ones that occurred like in Reynosa and in Nuevo Laredo and other places like that, almost on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, absolutely, daily. Last night I was working, we're expecting a very large gun battle. We were looking at over 50 armored and non-armored convoys of Sicarios and armored vehicles driving into what is Cartel de Agapo, or also known as the Gulf Cartel's territory. And so the plazas along our border from Nuevo Laredo to Miguel Alemán, Ciudad Mir, Reynosa and Rio Bravo, including Ciudad Victoria, are all embattled.
Wow.
Have roving gun battles now that last up to plus 8 hours. I mean, when I tell you hundreds of thousands of rounds, and I post on Tripwires and Triggers on my social media a lot of the videos that come out.
Yeah, we've seen those.
From the public. It's just incredible.
It is. I mean, we've seen, it's like you're watching a movie. You can hear the gunfire going off and people scattering and whatnot. At times it's so surreal that it appears like it's a movie. It's not real.
Yeah. And George, I'll tell you, this is one of the things that really bothers me. You know, I know that the American people are fatigued from talking about the immigration issue, the border issues, and I absolutely understand it. But one of the things that we have to recognize is that the cartels are separate from just the immigration issue, and that the human rights violations that they're committing of killing over 200,000 people in that country. You know, you're talking about 40,000 people missing. They've got 26,000 bodies in morgues across the nation that are not identified right now.
Amazing. Well, they recently found something like 300 in Jalisco buried in some bags. The amount of the atrocities that are going on, it's tremendous.
And I can tell you what that all is all about. The reason these mass graves are being found is because the cartels believe that if the bodies cannot be found, then therefore they don't exist. They were never murdered, right? So they do everything they can to make people just disappear. And what I mean by that is, and a good example, is a method known as the guiso, or the stew. This is a method in which the cartels utilize, and all cartels, not just one or a few of them, all of them do this, that make people disappear, where they literally incinerate the bodies. There's nothing left, not even bone.
Wow. Now, the cartels are also, the violence and the crime is also having an impact on Trump's efforts to hold these folks across the border that claim asylum, that, the asylum seekers are being held by Mexico pending their hearing. However, folks like the United Nations and the leftists here in the United States are now saying that it's too dangerous for these people to be in Mexico because of the cartel violence.
Yeah, and I understand that point, you know, that you shouldn't. What they're referring to is the MPP program, which is the Migration Protection Protocols, that has been very good for us in lowering the numbers by over 70% in just the last few months of people trying to cross illegally between the ports of entry. And what it does is it mandates that they stay in Mexico while they go through an asylum process and then come back at a later date, which they're given to show up before the courts. But what I would say to that is that, yes, the violence in Mexico is real. It is happening along our borders. But that's the American people and the American government has to do the best right by its citizens.
There
and if people
go.
Are going to cross in through Mexico, through Central America to come to the United States, then that's, these are our laws and our processes.
That's exactly right.
People are going to have to go through that. Just as it, when you cross through Mexico and other countries, you have to go,
you have to abide by their laws.
That's exactly right.
Right. Here in the last minute or so, can you give us then a idea of what you think needs to happen or will be happening?
Well, one of the things that, I've been pushing for heavily is designating the Mexican cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. And if that's new to the folks who are listening, the reason it's important is because we have to be very honest about the limitations of U.S. law enforcement. And as someone who was at the rank of captain in the Texas State Police and who conducted border operations for the largest border operation in U.S. history, which is Operation Secure Texas, That operation lasted 3 years in a joint environment. I recognized, and it is very clear, that we can't do this alone. And what the foreign terrorism designation does is it allows the three main things. First and foremost is it provides focus from the U.S. government on the cartels, because a lot of people still believe that they are just this drug cartel, right? That they don't recognize that the quantum leaps and capabilities that the cartels now have. The second thing that it does is it limits their mobility. And this is a big one, George, because, you know, just taking Sinaloa cartel, for example, we know that Sinaloa is in over 54 nations around the world.
Wow.
There are over 30,000 operatives. So it allows us to limit that mobility, not only in our own country, but globally. And then the third and final thing, which is very, very important, is it allows the Department of Defense to have authorities in this arena. Now, I'm not talking about boots on the ground in Mexico. What I'm talking about is collecting and working and providing intelligence to host nations, not only in Mexico, but wherever the cartels operate. And two other main things linked with that, which is that it allows us to target assets using the IRS, along with the Department of Justice, by priority. That's a very important point. Once we get there, we can use all the tools of the Homeland Security Enterprise and national tools of national power to go after the cartels. Wow. That's the important thing here, George. Wow.
Jason, thank you very, very much for taking time to be with us again. We're going to get you back on again as this saga continues south of the border and impacts on us. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, buddy. Always good to be with you. Thank you, George.
Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you on KLUP 930 AM Radio, The Answer. Howdy, 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 my friends. Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas, on KLUP 930 AM Radio. And we've got our good buddy Todd Benzman from the Center for Immigration Studies. We wanted to get him on so that he could give us an update about what is going on south of the border with regards to the influx of folks that were coming across. There's been a drop, but apparently there continues to be loopholes for some folks. Not to mention there are other issues that are happening. There have been some busts and whatnot. So we wanted Todd to give us an update of what's been going on with regards to the immigration crisis that we face. Todd, welcome to the show as usual. Tell us, what is going on? What's the latest about with regards to the immigration crisis here at our borders?
Well, so much is happening down there that, it would take a few of your programs to even crack the ice on it. But really what we're seeing now is huge decreases, obviously, in the numbers of apprehensions, particularly of Central Americans, which form the basis of the crisis that we saw through the summer. But and all ranging back to last fall.
And do you think this is direct result of the Trump administration tightening the loopholes and doing a few other things without congressional help, without Congress's help?
Sure, yeah. At this point, I think that it's safe for me to attribute all of if not most of the decline to President Trump's policies, and particularly to the policy known as the Migrant Protection Protocols, MPP, which is Wait in Mexico, which is having an astounding impact on the decision-making of Central American migrants. They're ending up back in Mexico and not being able to wait in the United States, which really pretty much is forever, for their asylum claims. They got to wait in Mexico, and tremendous impact on those folks, and the ones who are being brought into the U.S. to the immigration tent courts that are being set up right now are making this claim that don't return me to Mexico because it's dangerous there, and they're being returned anyway on grounds that unless the Mexican government is persecuting you, you can't stay here. You still have to go back. It's not a matter of whether or not you might get mugged or the cartels might victimize you or somehow you might become a victim of crime.
You could get mugged in Chicago, my understanding, right?
Right. So the claims that are they're all making claims right now, don't send me back to Mexico. Let me stay here, of course, so I can live illegally forever. So that's not working out under Cuccinelli and the immigration courts. So that's one policy that has had a tremendous effect. Many of those migrants are choosing to return back to Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador. But the other major policy that's having an effect is the Mexican government is actively interdicting migrants coming through. They're turning them back. They're holding them. They're making it difficult. And I think that's having an impact on decision making. It's just becoming very difficult to get into the United States now.
That's amazing. You know, this is a very, very new take from Mexico of them actually helping us. I mean, that really is amazing to me.
Well, I mean, you'll do pretty much anything to avoid stiff U.S. tariffs on your product.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you gotta be made to want to help. So they're helping, and this just shows us for the future, any Democratic administrations that come in, the Mexicans certainly can help if they flex their muscles a little bit. Where things are not really halted as much is in the area, the category of special interest aliens and extra continental migrants. These are folks that are coming in from Africa, Cuba, the Middle East, South Asia, North Africa, those kind of countries. We've got a lot of what happened was there was so much success among Central Americans in crossing the border and being released forever into the interior, that it signaled the entire world that they also can come. So there were many, many thousands who started journeying through South America and into Mexico, through Central America, Mexico, into the United States from these, you know, third world countries, countries far, far on other continents. And that has run into some trouble. The Mexicans are halting Africans at their border and holding them there at our behest, detaining them for, in some cases, months, making it difficult, and they're rioting. So you're hearing about fights that are breaking out down in the camps down there and American lawyers heading down there and human rights organizations, and that's what that's all about. The Mexicans are essentially saying you don't have a right to be in our country, so we're going to deport you. And so you have some of that happening, but then you have a lot of others who are getting around that. And if they make it to the U.S. border, the policies pretty much don't apply as much because they can make a convention on torture claim that they would be subject to torture if they were returned to their home countries. So there's a little bit of a loophole there for them. And so Africans are being waved through, and Middle Easterners and Bangladeshis are being waved through still.
Which is really, really strange because, I mean, if there is a terrorist that's going to sneak in, it's going to sneak in with that group, it would seem.
Yeah, they would claim, or you know, you could have war criminals. I mean, we don't really know who any of these folks are. Of course, all of them are claiming to be the victims of terrorists and the victims of war criminals in their home countries, but really, we don't really know who they are. And so there is an elevated risk associated with that kind of migration. So, but there is good news on that front. We ICE Homeland Security Investigations within the last week or two announced the second bust of a Bangladeshi smuggler. These were two smugglers who specialized in bringing in thousands of Bangladeshis over the Texas border. One of the Bangladeshis was based in Tapachula, and ran a network there, and the other Bangladeshi was based in Monterey. And the two of them worked together to move migrants coming to them from another group in Central America over the Texas border. But ICE took both of these out. They caught the second guy, Milan Mia, at Houston's George Bush International Airport. He's charged with alien smuggling, and so is the other guy who they caught. And they've also busted three special interest alien smugglers in Brazil within the last month, knocked out a big network and operation out of there that was moving migrants from the Middle East and Pakistan and Iran and all of those kind of countries of interest. So the Homeland Security investigations is really racking up a pretty impressive number of this kind of migration.
Todd, would it be fair to say that we are seeing a silver lining in the immigration, in controlling immigration? Can we fairly say that?
I think so. I think that we can definitely say that this is not weather related. I know it's hot out there, and normally we cycle down on apprehensions around this time of year, but the numbers are way, way below what they normally would be from weather related reductions. So I was talking to a USCIS source of mine just yesterday who was explaining to me that Cuccinelli, the director of USCIS, had issued an order requiring what's called that the credible fear interviewers consider internal relocation in all of their interviews. So if you're having a problem in Honduras with your local cop, then the question becomes, well, why didn't you move to a place a cop doesn't live?
Correct.
Then you're out. It's a no credible fear. And so the number of no boxes checked has risen to about 50% from 5%.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that one rule change, that one requirement to consider internal relocation, is having a massive impact on all of this kind of migration. This is kind of like, you know, if you live in a Fifth Ward in Houston or something, and you're victimized by the Crips or something, and you know, you're not going to just pick up your entire world and claim asylum in Canada, right?
Correct. You can move someplace else.
Why didn't you just move across town, you know, and get away from the Crips? And so, you know, it makes such conventional sense when you think about it, but we've never done it as a country. We just automatically check the yes box, and you're in on an asylum claim.
Correct.
That's over. Small little tweaks like that are having massive impact.
We've only got a few more, about 30 seconds more. What can we conclude from what is going on at this point, Todd? I mean, it's good news. Hopefully it will continue to be good news, but you know, with the recent Democratic debates, if the administration changes in the other direction, we might not be looking at this good news still, correct?
Well, you know, in terms of border security and immigration, 2020 is everything. All of these tweaks, policy changes, you know, personnel shifts will be reversed. We should assume that they would all be reversed if there's an administration change. And we'll go back to open borders. We'll just simply, we'll be flooded again with illegal migration. That's one thing. The other thing to take away is that almost everything that I've seen happen with this administration is incredibly innovative. Much of it has never been done. Things like MPP and, you know, threatening the Mexicans and none of them. This is all you know, really just breaking new ground.
That's great.
It shows that Congress is really not necessary for a lot of what we're seeing. I mean, this is all diplomatic. It's all within the executive office. And I hope that lesson goes forward into generations.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Todd, thank you very, very much for taking time to be with us and to enlighten us and give us an update about what's going on. It certainly seems to be great news, and which was what we've been needing for a long, long time.
Anytime, George.
Thanks a lot.
Hello, El Conservador listeners. If you are interested in following George Rodriguez, El Conservador, we invite you to follow him at his internet website, elconservador.net. You can also follow him on Facebook at George Rodriguez, El Conservador, and on Twitter at El Conservador for daily commentaries. You can also purchase his book, El Conservador, Conservative Opinions, online at Amazon.com. The book contains essays and commentaries about illegal immigration, fake news, and race relations. If you are interested in inviting El Conservador to speak to your group or event, please contact him through Facebook or through the station at 930amtheanswer.com. El Conservador thanks you for your support. Keep the fire of freedom burning.
Howdy, 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 my friends. Welcome back. George Rodriguez, El Conservador. And that entry music there was a march called Zacatecas. It is called the National March of Mexico. And since it is the liberals, I'm going to phrase it that way. Liberals and leftists are celebrating Hispanic Month, whatever that is, whatever Hispanic is. Not sure that's a Cuban, a Puerto Rican, whatever. Anyway. There is the celebration of Hispanic Month. I have been asked, my friends, I have been asked several times, why am I so proud to be an American? Why am I ashamed of being Hispanic or Mexican in particular? Well, you know, I am not ashamed of being Mexican, of Mexican descent, should I say, because I'm not a Mexican. I am not a Mexican national. I'm an American national. I'm an American citizen. I am red, white, and blue. And the question is, when did I realize that I was red, white, and blue? I mean, I was raised in a bilingual home in South Texas, surrounded by Hispanics, by people of Mexican descent, my relatives, cousins, tons of cousins and uncles and aunts and grandparents lived in Laredo. And in Laredo, I mean, you know, there was very few Anglos, very few, I can't remember any blacks. But at any rate, I was raised in San Antonio. I was raised on the south side of San Antonio. But I was raised in a middle-class white neighborhood. And to be honest, yes, you know, I faced a little bit of discrimination. I faced some of it. I mean, it was always there. It was always there. But my parents were also always there saying, don't worry about it. No big deal. Everybody gets discriminated against one way or another. And it's true. It's true. So I never worried about it. You know, it never really, really was a big issue with me. However, when did I recognize and really, really realized that I was an American? That's a very, very interesting question. I think the answer has got to be when I lived in Mexico. For you, those of you that know, I am of the Mormon religion, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I served a 2-year mission in Mexico. That means that I lived in Mexico. I lived and proselyted in Mexico for 2 years. Didn't come home. Full 2 years, 24 months, I was in Mexico. I was in Mexico City. I was in surrounding communities. And I've got to admit that when I first got to Mexico, it was a little strange because all of a sudden I was surrounded by people who looked like me, but didn't, you know, but there was a little bit odd culturally. There was also the poverty that I was just not used to. You know, that was a different situation altogether. At any rate, my first community that I worked in, because I got moved around, we've gotten moved around about every 6 months to various communities. And I was in one community serving in one congregation in a community called Tlanepantla in the north part of the city of Mexico in the Distrito Federal. And it was near, there were some pyramids nearby, some ancient pyramids. Of course, there's pyramids. There's, you know, anybody that's visited Mexico realizes that there's antiquities all over the place. I mean, the place was occupied by almost a million inhabitants at the time of Cortez's arrival, of the European arrival. At any rate, I remember standing on those pyramids and going, wow, my ancestors did build this. I mean, that's amazing. Amazing. So I felt a little bit of pride. But as time went on, my friends, as the 2 years moved along, as the months moved along, I began to realize more and more how much of an American I was. I began to realize how much red, white, and blue I was. I missed fried chicken. I missed barbecue. I missed football games. Oh my gosh, I missed high school football games. I mean, that's Texas. I missed Christmas because the holiday season is not the same down there, or was not the same. I mean, I think that they've adopted a whole lot more of our customs, including the Christmas tree. I remember that I'm missing Christmas. I'm doing Thanksgiving. There was no Thanksgiving. There is no Thanksgiving outside the United States, it's particularly in Latin America. And there was no Thanksgiving. I mean, wow, no turkey. And most of all, I think what I missed, I think more than anything, what I missed was just the cultural sense of being an American. Of, you know, I took things for granted, like water, like clean water, like clean air. Oh my gosh. I remember, the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, in Mexico City, they burned tires in celebration. Burned tires everywhere, everywhere. So you would walk outside on New Year's Day, and you had to wear you had to breathe through a handkerchief, because the rubber in the air, the rubber leftover, the rubber smoke was in the air. The rubber pollution was in the air. I mean, heavy, heavy, heavy. I remember looking at my handkerchief after a few moments being outside, and it was gray. It was gray. And I thought to myself, how strange. How strange. There were so many little nuances. The treatment of animals, cockfights, bullfights, I'm sorry, dogfights. Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine. I never went to one. Never. I heard about them, but I never went to one. I cannot imagine the treatment of poor little animals. I began slowly to realize. Then it hit me one afternoon. One afternoon, we were riding a bus after taking care of some appointments, after doing some proselyting. We were coming home, and we went by an area that was populated by a lot of American students, a lot of students that were studying abroad, so to speak. And these two American students got on the bus, and one of them was listening to an old transistor radio, they were picking up an American station. There was one American station in Mexico City, and they were listening to the radio, and I remember listening and hearing San Antonio Rose being played on the radio. And my friends, It hit me. I am not a Mexican. I am an American of Mexican descent. Even more so, I am a Texan of Mexican descent, a Tejano. I felt so, so blessed suddenly. And I kept asking myself, in a prayerful manner, I kept asking myself, what did I do to be born in the greatest state and the greatest land? You know, and I don't mean to hurt the feelings of our listeners that are in other states. But, you know, since that time, since the time that I came home from my mission, and, you know, that was, believe it or not, my friends, 46 years ago. Can you imagine? I was 19. 46 years ago! Oh, my goodness. At any rate, I came home, and with a deeper appreciation of America, of what it is, not to mention of the land. of the land, because there was so much pollution and so much destruction of the land in Mexico. You know, I have had the great opportunity, my friends, to live in West Virginia and see the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. I've had the great opportunity of living in Flagstaff, Arizona, and see the beautiful desert. Oh, my gosh. Not to mention the Grand Canyon. Oh, my goodness. I've had the opportunity to travel throughout the states, Louisiana, living in Baton Rouge, and seeing the gumbo, having Cajun food, having jambalaya. Oh, I love jambalaya. I love it. I've had the opportunity of eating barbecue in Kansas City. Mm-mm-mm, baby, let me tell you. Not to mention to walk the green at Lexington in Concord. Oh my gosh. Or I remember the first time that I walked into Philadelphia's Independence Hall and feeling this sense of reverence. Oh my gosh, my friends. I realized at that point, I am an American and I am so proud of it. I am so proud of being, I may be of Mexican descent, but I am an American first, my friends. Not to mention the many times that I've stood in front of the Alamo and been thankful that I am a Texan. That's important too. So my friends, you know, when people disparage me, and I guarantee my friends, oh, am I criticized constantly by the left and liberals, you know, accusing me of being ashamed of being a Mexican or Hispanic or whatever they, you know, whatever is in vogue that day. I'm not. I am, you know, I love fajitas. I love tacos. I love Flaco Jimenez's music. But I am an American of Mexican descent. I am an American, a Texan of Mexican descent. I am a Texan. And I am so proud of that, my friends. I am so, so proud of that. So let me tell you, my friends, that it is a pleasure. It is a pleasure for me to spend some time with you and share these things with you. I hope that you will tell your friends about us. I hope that you will support us you know, call KLUP and tell them that you want to hear more. Not to mention buy our book, El Conservador, Conservative Opinions. That is on Amazon. .com. So until next time, my friends, this is George Rodriguez, El Conservador, in San Antonio. Thank you for being with us. Join us again next week.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.